football on Off the Ball.
They can no longer dominate the ball, and the fear factor from City is gone, but they'll still finish second or third.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Thursday, bang on, 7:30. Tommy Rooney's going to join us today to talk about the brewing controversy. More Donegal All-Star nominees than Kerry All-Star nominees. Must have been a close game in the Ireland final, was it? Wait, Nathan Murphy's going to join us today, 15. He sat through the Raptors committee hearings yesterday about the FAI. He's also obviously going to be glued as the spiritual leader of Golf Weekly for now, of the Ryder Cup. And Stuart Burns, you had to be there from 9 o'clock, is 6 Shelbourne matches. Colin, good morning to you. That was a joke.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
You well?
Arthur, how are you?
Great.
Dara, how are you?
Well, how's it going?
Bit of a panel.
You're all very lucky that I'm here this morning. Two reasons. One, I was staying at my parents' house last night and I forgot my charger, so it was an absolute fluke that there was still enough battery left to wake me up. But then also I got electrocuted. I put my finger in a light yesterday. Kind of forgot that it was plugged in and was twisting away, only for it to get thrown across the room.
You got thrown across the room? No way.
Yes.
Was this like Mario Formula 1 2, all the hair?
Essentially, yeah. My brother-in-law sent me a picture of Don King. I was like, yeah, that was basically it.
No way.
Yeah, so don't play with live. It was a lamp that actually wasn't even earthed. I was like, that could have been it.
What'd it feel like?
Would it have been a different show this morning, or were you just going like, show must go on? FAI, Ryder Cup, let's go, boys.
Frantic.
Like, it was actually really sore, my thumb were out.
Okay.
But
Jordan got electrocuted. Who else can do this?
Yeah. Anybody.
Frantically surging around.
Let's Dermot Keenan, come on down, buddy.
That's
Keith, can you do Thursday?
That's not that's hospital worthy, isn't it?
No, because it wasn't as bad, obviously.
Jeez, I remember my sister got electrocuted. One of my childhood traumatic memories.
Yeah.
Seeing her. Yeah. She's crying now, but.
Well,
it's tough at the time, you
that's
know.
You say
but
publicly.
How are you now,
you're concerned.
You're a bit shocked. You would be a bit
shocked. But Spider-Man got bitten, didn't he?
Yeah, so my superpower
is... So what did Superman get?
I don't know, maybe...
I think he got electrocuted.
No.
He was born that way, was he? You just had a natural ability to be Superman. I hope you're okay, hon.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
You don't look like you got electrocuted. That's the only thing I'd say to you.
You never can tell.
Although there's an electric energy to you today.
Always, I would say. No, not today. Always.
Now, the pre-show meeting with all the president's men, you had some serious stories that you want to get to.
Didn't sleep very well, but I don't know. Let me whoop tell me how well I slept. No, 54% recovery. That's not great. Anyway, on to matters of more importance.
No, we can... You didn't tell us actually till right now. This is all of our first time hearing it. Usually we can give us a heads up.
That's quite fun. Yeah.
Would you let out a shout?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And my poor dad sitting on the couch going, "What's going on?" So,
and did you really get thrown across the room?
Well, I mean, I definitely
you moved.
Yeah, I'd walk it back.
Yeah.
Were you airborne?
That's rough enough.
Well, it was no crack, I would say. Yeah.
Did it put out the whole power in the house?
No.
All right.
Because it wasn't earth. Maybe that would happen. It's tripped a switch.
You know what I bet the first thing you said was? I bet it's everyone in the same situation. What's happened there? That's definitely the first thing you said. What's happened there?
What's happened there? Why is it always in an English accent? Anyway, let's move on. There's really plenty to get through. Anthony, the second coming of the Messiah. What a footballer that guy is.
He's pretty good.
He scored one and set up one. Real Betis is number 7. Against Nottingham Forest last night in Europe, their return to Europe. Forest were 1-0 down, but they went 2-1 up before Anthony himself got the equaliser, and he set up the first one. Lovely old assist too.
And he's gone. There's a sell-on clause.
I think they get some. I think they have a nice old deal for themselves. United if better sell him.
Yeah,
I think it's 50% or something like that. Yeah, but that's how desperate they were to get rid of him. But there he's flying out of Betis. Yeah, a good few other things happen. Big Ev on the bench. As Roma went to France, they had a very nice time for themselves. They won 2-1. They were 2-0 up in that game. Artem Dovbyk didn't score.
Big Ev has bulletin board material from Fabio Capello. I don't know if everybody saw this. Fabio Capello, not a top player. None of those lads. They're no good.
It's a fair It is fair what he's saying. Like, assuming that he's not, like, just written him
off.
He's
only 20.
That's what I mean, though. Like, it's not like the lads around the league, comparatively.
What do you mean?
Like, the other teams have, like, Vlahovic, your man, Juventus.
But Vlahovic is, like, 28.
That's what I mean.
He's leaving on a free.
I don't think, he's not saying that Evan Ferguson could never be a top player, is he?
I don't know. It seems like it's a factual thing. This is like, you're a top player. You're not a top player.
We would be surprised if Evan Ferguson went to Roma and led them to win in the league. They're second in like 25 years. That, I think, would be a remarkable outcome.
Well, that would be...
But that's what he was talking about.
Well, no. They have a few issues in attack. Dovbyk and Ferguson aren't top players. I don't know. Anyway, surely this... one thing we've learned over the last 12 months is that the only thing that matters is being written off by somebody. You can be, you can do all the hard work, you can be tactically amazing, you can put in all the best strength and conditioning work, you can have the best psychologist, but you need to be written off by somebody to prove those motherfuckers wrong.
And that team is continuing for 2026 has already started with these All-Star nominations, which we'll get to that. Eze, your boy, scored.
Kerry people, let's be having you this morning. Come on.
We'll get to that very quickly now. Eze, your boy, scored his first Arsenal goal. Do you know who else scored for Arsenal? Your other boy, Trossard.
Yeah.
They went 2-0. Paulinho got a lovely overhead kick for Spurs. Do you see this?
If Trossard takes my abuse personally and fires them to a league title, I'll be the happiest man.
What if Eze underperforms?
Well, I'd be very
while Arsenal win the league, you'd be slightly underwhelmed. Paulinho got a great overhead kick for Spurs. I'm sure Bobby saw it. Phil Foden and Savino scored two lovely goals for Man City. And the draws were made for the Carabao Cup fourth round. Barry Murphy's Cardiff City play Hollywood Wrexham.
Oh, yeah. An all Wales derby.
Yeah, Welsh derby for sure. They go to Wrexham as well for that one. So that's what you had last night. Newcastle also hammered Bradford 4-1 at home. And Liam Scales played a Celtic through at Reds there in Europe as a 1-1. Kelechi Iheanacho scored. You were telling us before some interesting
Liam Scales played a passionate game. Marko Arnautovic, the former Stoke striker, of course.
Once linked with Manchester United, of course.
Yeah. Scored a scrappy old goal to equalise in that game, and Liam Scales just happened to be at the back post where Marco was trying to leave with the ball after he'd scored, and they bumped into each other, and then they bumped into each other again, and Marco kind of just grabs his collar and says, "Get out of my way," and Scales doesn't move.
Good man, Scales.
Scales turns around and says, "I'm not moving."
You know, that wasn't,
and then they both moved out of the way, and that was it. But
wasn't a bad Scales impression that as well.
You reckon?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He's just
Irish to him.
So that's what I mean. It's a good accent. And tonight, Ger, of course, Aston Villa entertain, although not much entertaining to be seen at Villa Park and beyond this season so far, but they play Bologna.
Look, the mood music has shifted. Mochi's out the door. Once that happens, everything is great.
Yeah, it's like the problem.
The breathless reporting from The Athletic is like, for the last 2 years, the whole world thinks Mochi is a genius. And then they boot him out the door, and then you go, the whole world thinks this guy is a genius. Everybody wanted him. I'm like, I mean, come on. If they're under 16s and under 18s and under 20s were as good as you've been telling me for the last 8 years, they'd now be European champions for successive seasons. So,
does it happen? Because I'm not paying as much attention to the Villa stuff, to be fair, but like for the Man United stuff, because it's such obviously great business, click-wise, you'll have like under 18 fitness coaches getting announced.
Yeah.
It's like formerly of Man City is like, whoa, who's
a
this
massive
fella?
Coup.
Yeah. Who's this guy? Oh my god, I feel sorry for it sometimes.
And he went to the University of Colorado.
Unbelievable.
And this is what he studies.
Jesus.
And it wasn't actually fitness at all, it was something else. Yeah. And yet here he is.
It's actually a sports psychologist.
Can happen to anyone.
To protect the identity of our sources who were not allowed to tell us this, this guy's amazing, according to people with information pertaining to it.
No, they do some great work. Now,
they do loads of great work. That bit is the most annoying. It's like, I'm actually trying to find the quote. If a deal for Olave gets done, many will see it as a significant coup given the work produced across the Spaniard's career. This is replacing Monchi. It's like, what a coup. We don't know how it's going to work out. And by the time it totally fails, I'll be somewhere else.
Does he have to start using his first name now? Because he's lost a bit of like Monchi aura about himself. He's been sacked. Can't be.
You see, I don't know. I'm sure you didn't bother reading the very long statement, but actually, he has not been sacked.
They've parted ways.
He will continue to be an advisor for esports, won't he? Although Unai Emery's like, he wanted another challenge.
You know, he came here. Yeah. He came here after us. He stayed 2 years and he wanted another challenge. We'll move on. That's what Emery was saying. But the press release, slightly different language.
Do you think he has the esteem to get gardening leave?
Monchi?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd say they'd be like, there's offset language in a lot of these contracts. Somebody comes in and starts paying you, we stop paying you.
I think you know you've made it when you're on gardening leave.
Is that your ambition in life?
Yeah. To be placed on it.
Granted.
You know?
I'd say it's pretty bleak.
Gardening leave?
Yeah.
Well, not a gardening to be done. So with Monchi gone...
Hang on. We need to explore this a little bit. Go on. What? Getting paid to do no work.
But getting paid, not allowed to do anything.
Yeah, but like, you're not allowed, but...
These guys aren't like... you don't get to that point in your life kind of reveling in the...
But a little bit of downtime.
It's extended holiday.
Like, what was your man on, like, at United...
Ashworth?
Yeah. He's only got a few months of it, like.
Well, he was doing great research of all the best players in the world.
He was, to be fair to him.
Really worked out?
Yeah.
I just...
Well, he was keeping pals with the FA. That worked out for him.
Yeah. It's all bleak enough.
It is suggesting what you should do, isn't it, in the title?
Yeah, I don't know where the title comes from. It must be a little bit of a joke, like.
Are there any etymologists out there who can explain to us?
Oh. I don't know.
It does allow you to attend to personal matters.
Yeah. But I mean, you're probably not wanting that because you've just bombed out of some... Inevitably, you've just bombed out of somewhere else to go somewhere else to take that on. You just have to sit in there waiting. Like, you wouldn't function.
One?
Isn't that? You wouldn't.
One or personal?
Oh, you.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I think I'd be all right. I think I'd be very good in gardening leave.
It could be the best time of your life.
That garden won't weed itself, sir.
You can write.
Man of leisure.
But you know, just be like, oh, great. You could watch all those crap movies or amazing films or all the books.
Like, I suspect that would get pretty grating after a week.
What?
Do you not think so?
Of all of the people who would have trouble with gardening leave, I expected you would have the least trouble.
It's not because you're like, I'd love to be a man of leisure. Don't get me wrong with that. Like, you know, a big fat payoff, do whatever you want for 2 years. That's fine. It's the fact you know you're going into something else and you can't properly engage yet.
Do you think maybe, though, that everybody cheats?
Well, that's between them and
their lords.
It's not for me to speculate what Dan Ashworth was or wasn't doing.
We're talking in generalities here, nothing specific. I'm talking in generalities now. You can answer that.
Do you want to hear the origin? It's not very detailed, but the term originated in the British civil service, where employees had the right to request special leave for exceptional purposes. The term came to widespread public attention in the 1986 show, BBC sitcom Yes, Prime Minister.
Good show.
All right.
That's all it says. There's actually no reasoning for it. The specific name, but there you go.
It does lighten something that's very serious in someone's life because of the title.
Yeah.
It's like Quincy, that disease, which is horrible. It sounds fun, though.
Or shingles.
Quincy. Shingles.
Yeah. Shingles, measles
sounds a bit cute. But, you know, but gardening leave is definitely the corporate version of that. Chickenpox.
Did we get sidetracked here somehow?
Yeah, and it's funny because there's actually loads to talk about. So what are we doing? All-Stars. Jesus. Well, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Not a Cork man in sight. When's the last time a losing finalist has had more nominations than the winners?
Cork and Meath can feel the most... hard done by here, given they were the ones who had the best record this year against the All-Ireland champions.
Yeah, very good point, Jordan. So, look, obviously Kerry are well enough represented, but it's the Donegal representation, which is quite something.
Yeah.
So I suppose, look, it kind of goes back to this theme of the week without getting into detail of what we discussed yesterday, but is it all about the final? You know, is it all about the All-Ireland final? Well, because obviously this is why we're aggrieved.
I don't know. I got given out to on this show for telling everybody after the quarterfinal that I had seen the All-Ireland final champions in waiting from the pace and power and precision of their performance against Tyrone and Armagh. Which one was it? Which
Armagh
game was it? Armagh.
Yeah, Tyrone second.
And then they slaughtered Tyrone and they slaughtered Donegal with like three of the most impressive back-to-back performances. You know, did the Dubs do that? Against really good teams?
Didn't have to, did they?
That's the thing. Like,
soften their head of everyone.
Don't forget Cavan as well. And just before the 30 year.
Yeah, they were kind of just, that was the warm up, getting the dirty diesel out of the tank.
Four times, if you ask me.
And I didn't say green diesel, you
Dubs didn't need it.
What?
The Doors didn't need to do it.
No, they didn't. They didn't. It was always controlled, and there weren't actually three other good teams around.
Yeah.
And I think the Dubs could clearly have done it. But
I would say this Kerry team isn't as good as Dublin at their peak.
But they're not. You wouldn't say. We'll never be able to compare them really because of the rule change.
For sure.
But like the Connolly, the best Dublin team was actually the one that Donegal beat. That was the most entertaining one to watch. They had all the best players in their pomp. And probably the next year when they come back and win the All-Ireland.
Was the most stacked team not 2017, even though there were close games in that era against Mayo? Well,
Conn comes into it.
Oh, maybe Conn. But I think...
And they have Connolly just before he steps away the first time. Not when he comes back.
Was he not at his peak?
When did Connolly go? 16?
12, 13. Yeah, I think...
Was it 16 he came back in 19? Connolly?
Cameo. This is something for the deep, dark winter we can get into.
But... sorry, were you finished there?
I just think Kerry, Kerry's All Ireland win this year was so spectacular and so amazing, and like, fair enough, they have a wobble, right? But in the wobble, loads of players are missing, and then those players come back, and they produce such stunning performances to hammer the best teams in the country, like literally the best teams. Everyone's like, "Oh, it's such an even year. The power rankings are so mad. We can't tell who's." And then it's like, "What are you talking about? You're dead." Dead.
Yeah.
But Donegal have more All-Stars. Nominees.
I know you can make the argument against, because they probably maybe had more competitive games across the year for sure, but they also had their wobble losing to Tyrone.
Yeah.
So I don't know, it's a weird one.
Yeah.
Maybe it's unearthing some sort of bias.
Dublin's lowest representation in exactly 20 years. So Donegal have 10 nominations. Kerry have 9.
Yeah, Donegal were class for a long time.
They were.
I was at a couple of other games in the season. They were so good. Like, even people forget about the Meath game. Like, they destroyed
them. Yeah, that's true. That is fair.
Destroyed them. And Meath were looking... Like, no one was really expecting me to win that. But like...
That second
Meath
half.
Were looking pretty good. But that second half was one of the best second halves of football you'll ever see from a team. Like,
if Donegal win the All-Ireland, that gets looked at very differently in hindsight.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know, like, Harry only have 9.
It's 11-10.
11-10?
Yeah.
Jeez, that is hard going, though. Like, that seems low, just proportionately. 9, see, it's different with the hurling, because the hurlers, there isn't as much competition.
Mm. Yeah, it does. Anyway, look, I'm sure on the night it'll be 8, Kerry.
Yeah.
Pre Donegal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the final team, the one that will be remembered, will be the actual team. Young Footballer of the Year, no Kerry representation either.
But sorry, can I just say, like, well done, GAA All Star Selection Committee, in giving Kerry something, a grievance to nurse, even when they go up and they accept all the awards. Now, no Young Player of the Year, as you point out, the
production line stopped.
But that'll be there, like, we didn't get any credit for that All Ireland. Oh, it was the new rules. Oh, you were a one man team.
Yeah.
Oh. That's what they'll be like digging into this, going, how do we turn this?
It's great for them and it's bad for their rivals. Let's tell people who were the Young Footballer Year nominees: Oisin Kennedy, Matthew Thompson, Finbar Rorty. Thompson was fairly extraordinary, but again, he could be punished because of Galway and the insipid nature of their elimination, where Thompson, among the rest of his teammates, wasn't that great that day. But up to that point, a bit like Donegal to the final, was excellent.
He's brilliant to watch as well.
Yeah, he's
not too many players. Roddy Clifford type of player.
Genuinely enjoyable to watch play.
Very good player.
And then the Footballer of the Year, just in case you're waking up to this news, nominations: David Clifford, of course, Michael Murphy, and Joe O'Connor. And you and I asked David Clifford about, was it Joe O'Connor actually? Would he threaten you for Footballer of the Year? And you know, he's a good player, you know. Good player. So there are your three.
That's what happened. Give it to Murphy.
It'd be funny if they give it to
O'Connor. What if the Kerry goal gets split?
Well.
Yeah.
Who votes player of the year? That's completely the journalists as well.
No, I think that's the players.
Is it okay?
Yeah. The nomination is done by the journalists.
All right, okay.
As far as I know. And then the players vote.
Even for the All Stars?
No. The All Stars.
Just for what are you? Okay, sorry. Oh, it's all fairly tedious, really. Sure.
The whole thing, eh?
No, I'm sure it's a lovely honour, but like, it's not. Love is. Who cares? Like.
Ah, well, the players do. Have you ever been?
No.
It's really worth going to. It is. You can be sceptical.
Probably a bit late for me now, to be honest.
Well, no. It's on in like 4 weeks.
It was a joke. as if I was going to break into an intercounty team and then get up to speed where I'll be an All-Star
nominee.
Not as nominee.
A player, as a... As, anyway, all
right. I coach. I can come back as a coach, you're right. I suppose they get to go.
As an attendee, you can buy a ticket and go and have the crack. And
oh,
everybody,
what would that cost?
Well, and you do work in the media.
I know.
Sure you can,
like,
you know.
Buy a ticket is in... Is there a crowd at it? Or is it just tables? All right, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's gone from the convention centre.
It's in the RDS. Yeah.
Strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not really the home.
I'd say it's great night if you win, like, especially if you're coming off the back of an All-Ireland. We were talking about it there beforehand, the 2021, or in the hurling. Cork got no All-Stars. Got to an All-Ireland final, got no All-Stars. That has to be the first time that ever happened.
Yeah.
And the last footballer of the year who didn't get to the final?
I think it's Brogan, yeah.
Again, Cork done.
In 2010.
Cork done again, yeah.
Unbelievable.
But, like, they are important, though. Because, like, when someone retires, a great player retires, it's the first thing you say about them, isn't it? Unless they've won a number of All-Irelands.
It's like
3-time All-Star.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Like, it's not like Ballon d'Or when no one really
matter,
mentions it.
Sorry, I'm not saying it doesn't. But
Higgins
kind of,
and Boyle, they're all-time greats on the back of...
Boyle had four in a row. Like, it's unbelievable.
I think it depends on the player and the county they're from. Like Craig Lennon there last year was a massive achievement to get an All-Star, right? But then Patrick Horgan yesterday, we were a while mentioning that he got four All-Stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It depends.
Yeah, I think though, when the heat comes off it, people will go, he did over in such a long period of time show up on the team of the year regularly. So the argument is being made less and less, I think, failure, loser. I think that seems to have gone largely from the discourse. But it does. There is this historic legacy where he was voted by the people who are watching games. I hope they're watching games. On the team of the year four times.
Four times in 18 years.
It's like an incredible... You're like, ah... That's the last he did it 4 years in a row.
Well, yeah,
his position was pretty sacked over the years.
Yeah, come on,
saying.
What are you talking about? He's like up against Canning, up against who were the other 37, 38 clubs? Callanan. It was somebody else, wasn't there?
Four times in 18 years would be a bone or a pro.
Yeah,
because
you
spread it out like you're not three in a row. Well, three in a row is like choking all of purple pants. Like,
longevity.
Yeah, I mean Ferguson only won the European Cup twice in 18 years, and he was a champion every year. So like, what? What a loser.
You know what I mean? So, that is the All-Stars. We'll talk with Tommy about that imminently. Loads of other stuff happening. It's the eve of the Ryder Cup and it's the day after the Oireachtas committee with the FAI. What do you want to talk about first here?
I'll go Oireachtas.
Well, so the first 20 minutes seemed to be a stonewalling of questions by the FAI contingent. And then Nathan was actually on the radio last night. He'll join us again very soon. That after that it got a bit better and they kind of expanded and opened up their answers a bit, but largely, and certainly this is the tone of the papers this morning, is that it was a day of immense frustration once again in this partnership that has no chemistry, the Oireachtas committee and the FAI. They just can't get it together at all, and it leaves me feeling quite borderline angry about how pointless the whole thing is.
Go on.
Particularly from the Oireachtas committee point of view, it was like, I'm really trying to take this thing seriously, and as Nathan firmly pointed out last night, and correctly, these are serious topics, talking about historical abuse, the women's team in the 1990s. This is serious. And it's about when they knew this. So May 2023 to January 24, that's the crucial timeline that they're trying to decipher who knew what when, and that wasn't answered. And we can talk about that detail more with Nathan. But in the meantime, what is it actually for? Is what something I constantly ask myself when these things happen. I said yesterday on the show, having watched a few clips and listened to the events of the day, it leaves me feeling even stronger that opinion is that this is essentially a group of people sitting around in suits, pretending that they're very serious people, asking very serious questions with huge repercussions for their victims. And nothing actually happens from it. And if the FAI, my feeling is, if they had answered every single question extensively, or if they had stonewalled every single question that was asked, we'd be left with the same result. So I have no faith in this Oireachtas committee. What is it for? Why is it even filmed? Why is it even available to watch? When something is filmed like that, their nature of theatre enters, because they know that the public are going to see this. It is a performative exercise of something that's actually quite serious, and it's entirely pointless because what happens in the back of it?
Well, what happens on the back of it is a lot of homework. I'm noted for asking for documentation. It's like, grand, we'll give you documentation. But I think, like, obviously there are very serious matters, as you said, at the heart of it. But there's also something else going on here. And it's like, for the first time, I think maybe since the formation of the state, there's a proper case being made for the academies to get funding. And now somehow that is being linked with these historic abuse cases. Who benefits from that? Who is benefiting from the fact that just before the budget, when the football community has got its organisational power together for the first time, they're going forward to the Houses of the Oireachtas. They've lobbied properly. They've got the audit of the academies done. They've put their best foot forward. And now, somehow, that's being linked to this other story. I'm not diminishing the importance of the historic abuse cases, right? Because clearly, that is something that needs to be dealt with. I presume similar historic abuse cases and who knew what when would be excavated in the other major sporting organisations. There was a reference made to, we'll call Swim Ireland in to talk to them about this. I'm like, okay, fair enough. I'm sure the GAA and the IRFU and the Scouts, all of these organisations have these things to deal with. But it has nothing to do with the funding of the academies, which is actually going to be done by the clubs, you know. So the FAI will be involved in terms of, like, we've lobbied for it and here's what we think should happen. And as far as I know, it's going to be administered through Sport Ireland. The most important thing that happened yesterday was Dr. Una May from Sport Ireland, when she was asked by CHAP, do you have 100%? 100%. And she was like, yeah, they did everything they were supposed to do. Like, I was like, all right. Okay, so the Sport Ireland person, who's the only independent person in the room, who's not there to grandstand or for airtime or, you know, like, has been appointed properly to her position, says, I'm happy that they followed everything they were supposed to follow. That's it. Not this self-aggrandizing, puffed up, I'm very important here and I'm going to ask you very questions. And you better, the body language thing, like, oh, thank you, gosh, your body language.
Yeah,
like, oh.
The optics of wanting to be seen to be very stern and asking very tough questions seems to be the biggest goal from the committee. Well, they were very strong in their questioning. They were insistent on getting some information and it wasn't forthcoming and the frustration grew. And that is the continuing reporting from these committees when it comes to the FAI. The very tough questions the FAI refused to answer, very frustrating. And the FAI are a bit of a rabble. Oh, this is a waste of time. But we'll do it again. Mm. You know, we'll have another one of these.
Oh, it's like a lap of honour. We'll get to go. We'll get to go at you again.
And I don't know how many people are, not necessarily fools, but that agree with the committee side of it, because accountability is obviously important.
All the papers today have got, the FAI got hammered yesterday, serious question marks about their ability to run the organisation. I'm like, really? Is that your takeaway from that? Not this group of, like, I don't know how successful these political careers have been. Some of them have never stood for election. Some of them have stood for election and been rejected. Some of them are independent senators. Some of them are failed party leaders. They're grand, right? Like, but it's all, you've insulted the country by your actions here today. They have not. They've come into a committee who, it seems to me, didn't fully understand the difference between a legal case and a criminal case. I don't know. We actually have a clip of Alan Kelly talking about the legal case afterwards with Nathan. Can we play this?
In relation to the actual committee meeting itself, they've set out that they have reasons why they wouldn't answer questions relating to specific cases. We always understood that. They've also made reference to some Garda documentation that they provided us with, which was a one-liner saying it would be preferable if the cases they're referring to were dealt with before they come in front of the committee. If that's the case, every single committee here probably wouldn't meet for decades, because ultimately there is always legal cases, and even legal cases can be put forward for different reasons and on the rare occasions manufactured in order to prevent people possibly coming in here if that was the case. So they all have to be dismissed. Once the committee meeting's begun, it was really, really difficult to look at an organisation that refused to answer questions relating to what is obviously out there in the public media relating to issues that predate January 2024. I think it's unacceptable. There is a way in which questions could be answered. They refused at times. In fairness, I think the president did open up a small bit in relation to these issues. But as a result, it means that the committee of which I chair, afterwards having a chat, deep concerns in relation to what has happened in the FAI as regards safeguarding pre-January 2024 and possibly even after that.
So do you believe they were hiding behind that Garda advice?
Well, for me, I've never seen it before, that a committee would be obstructed from its work because an AP, a non-attested Garda, sends basically a one-liner saying it would be preferable. There's lots of things in life that could be preferable. But actually, if we're called in front of an Oireachtas committee to discuss certain issues, there are rules and there are criteria around which we always, every day inside here, have to work. That is not a criteria. Gardaí don't intervene in Oireachtas committees, the work of Oireachtas committees. We don't, as an Oireachtas, intervene in Garda activities. That's the line, separation of powers. That's the way it is.
I think that's one of the biggest strawman arguments I've ever heard anybody put up at any point. The advice from the Gardaí was that there is a criminal case, not a legal case. So first off, the introduction there of like, oh, sometimes spurious legal cases are introduced to try and clog up the work of the committee. These are not criminal. These are criminal cases, not legal cases. Like, so the Eileen Gleeson case is a legal case, right? Totally separate issue. But what they're talking about here are the potential for someone who has been accused of, as it was referred to yesterday, serious crimes. I won't use the phrase yesterday because, again, I think that could potentially damage someone's right to a fair trial. And if you're a defence barrister, you're looking at all the stuff yesterday going, just say something, please, about the case. Say anything about our case because we'll say we won't be able to get a fair trial. And I just can't understand how they didn't appreciate that. Just do this in 3 months' time. Do this in 6 months' time. What difference does it make? The facts of the historic stuff won't change.
Yeah. And in fairness to Owen Shane, he's been very strong on that point as well. And you know what's the rush here to do this?
The budget.
So let's come to this. That's right. The budget's in 12 days' time. 12 days to the 7th of October. And then the fallout from this seems to be, well, will this affect any of the funding that the FAI will get? What use is it punishing an already struggling organisation again because you're disappointed with their performance in an Oireachtas committee? What is this like? Now, there's, you know, what Alan Kelly described the FAI as an organisation that's been bailed out. So there's a sense of ownership about this. Well, we own them, so we're going to take away their funding because, to be honest with you, we're very disappointed that they didn't answer our tough questions.
We bailed out the banks. Like, this, look.
And by the way, plenty of blame to be apportioned to the FAI. I'm not defending the FAI here. Mm. I'm more annoyed about the Oireachtas committee.
Yeah, precisely. They can do their business slightly better. They could certainly have dealt with this better. And I very much look forward to all of the explanations that are going to come when the criminal cases are over, because they do have a lot to explain, right? And that's fair enough. But I did think, I see some of the papers saying there was no grandstanding yesterday. There was plenty of it. There was absolutely plenty of it. People desperate to get election, people desperate to get some airtime, people desperate to boost their political profile. And to what end? So like, oh, we're centering the women at the centre of this case. Were they really? Was that what was going on yesterday? Because it didn't feel that way. Right, we moving on?
Yeah.
The NFL shop is in town. Who was you? Some of you were there for freebies the other night, were you?
I was supposed to be. I couldn't make it.
You sent your measurements and...
I didn't get the free stuff though.
Oh.
Yeah. I had a stroll in there yesterday though. It's quite impressive.
Yeah.
Quite impressive, yeah.
Barabua are the Belfast-born clothing brand, and they've collaborated with the NFL. GAA-themed jerseys ahead of the game in Croke Park this weekend. 32 of them, one for each county or one for each NFL franchise. I couldn't work it out.
Oh, maybe it's a happy coincidence.
Maybe both.
Wrote it there, Roisin.
Just looking behind you as well, at something Gaelic Games inspired.
Yeah, when we knew the game was coming here, we wanted to find product stories and collaborations that would really resonate here in Ireland. And we approached the team at Berbua, and they've obviously got this this brilliant heritage in telling retro GAA stories. And we asked them, what would it look like if the Vikings or the Steelers were GA teams? And we've got the jerseys here.
Wexford taking in Kilkenny by the looks of things.
They are. It's really cool, and we've got a little bit of stitching here to mark the occasion on Sunday. It's really limited edition, so we think this will go fast.
What time can they get down here to get these?
6 p.m. on Friday. We have a little bit of a party here in store. I hope that queue's not too long for people that come out.
All right, Tommy Rooney. Good morning to you.
Can't hear anything now with Jer.
Yeah, you can hear me now, Tommy. How are you?
Oh, hey, how are you? Sorry about that. My bad. How are we doing?
Good. Not as inflamed as the Kerry Mafia WhatsApp group when the news broke yesterday that Donegal have more All-Star nominees than Kerry. What's going on, Tommy? Were you in the room that decided this?
Poor Kerry. Not to relitigate a summer of issues. Yeah, look, the All-Star nominations... How could I paint a scene for you here? Picture a round table.
Smoky room.
Right. Picture people you can trust, people you can't. I'm not talking faithfuls and traitors here. You know, there's a little bit of this going on. And yeah, look, there's 12 people who vote, and some decisions were, you know, very straightforward. Others went down to a debate, a row, someone making the case for a particular player. And what ultimately happens is very rarely you'll have someone going maybe head to head with another in a vote. It's very rarely 1v1. It could be take 4 from 6. And sometimes players can miss out or elements can happen. And then you're having a recap at the end and you're like, oh, Donegal... I have one more than Kerry here. Didn't expect that. But I think, look, I think it'll balance itself out when it comes to the team. I think you can be fairly sure that of Kerry's 9 All-Star nominations, a lot of them are going to be on the team. From Donegal's 10, yes, they've got one more. I don't think half of them will make the team. That'd be my instinct on it. And that, you could say, might just represent possibly... how bloody ridiculously well Kerry's players, I suppose, played the team game to perfection. And I don't mean that in any disparaging way, but like Kerry had facilitators up top in midfield that made them tick and led them to the promised land of an All-Ireland title. And they fully deserved it.
And they don't get nominated. So you're Graeme O'Sullivan's.
Like, yeah, and like, who would you put Graeme O'Sullivan in instead of?
Well, it's a good question, Tommy, but I wasn't in the room, so I'm you were his biggest booster all year. You were like, this guy's importance is galvanesque.
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting more abuse here. My messages are coming through. It's my phone has been like this at 7 this morning. Graeme O'Sullivan had an absolutely exceptional year. Like, and this debate comes up quite a lot. Very often the player that is recognised by his teammates may not be recognised at the table of the All-Stars.
And how do we fix that, though? Because I actually think this is really important, right? We were talking earlier, like, for some players, the All-Star recognition is incredibly important. For some players, it's like, it's a nice addition to have while you go about the business of harvesting All-Ireland medals. And then there are those players who do these jobs that we don't really understand from the outside, but who are... not the first name on the team sheet, because Clifford's going to be the first name on the team sheet whenever he's fit. But certainly it's like, well, that guy's always on my team because I know that he's my facilitator. He touches the ball 80 times a game. Now, sometimes it's not very spectacular, but it makes sure that we're able to put pressure in the right part of the pitch. It's like, I remember the passing stats came out for the very first time and it turned out Roy Keane was miles ahead of everybody else. People thought he was just a tackler and a runner up to that point. And it was like, actually, oh, he controls games. I think we're still a bit behind understanding fully. I think the analysis community is fully there, right?
But they obviously protect their data, leaking it to some favourite journalists, who then produce the best work. And then, but you guys don't always share with the rest of us that, no, these guys are the most important.
Yeah, Ger, I think you're spot on with a lot of that. Like, with a lot of what you're saying, I think we're miles behind in terms of recognising defensive plays, interceptions, you know, you look at your hooks, blocks and tackles with hurling, but sometimes you can recognise that a lot easier than who defends well in, say, Gaelic football, for example, or who makes... I'll give you an example, right? There's a midfielder who got nominated this year. And for me, he did one job, one very specific role, incredibly well. He didn't do the all-action blockbuster stuff. He didn't necessarily kick a load of points. But he did one job incredibly well. I think it's great that he got nominated. He's at an earlier stage of his career in terms of Pat O'Coffey Byrne, right? So O'Coffey Byrne wasn't kicking points, wasn't really, you know, a turnover king. But in the air, he dominated. And he was a huge platform for a Dublin team trying to rebuild after Brian Fenton and James McCarthy retire. So O'Coffey Byrne got nominated for something very specific. In defence, we had some very important players nominated that were man markers this year. And that probably caught the light. You're looking at Jack Coyne from Mayo. Like, Jack Coyne got the better of, just looking back on my notes here, Coyne would have marked Gallen in Championship this year and did incredibly well. Did really well. One of the only players that did really well in Rob Finnerty, who was also nominated for an All-Star. Did really well on Darragh Canavan, who got his goal against Mayo and Omagh when he wasn't being marked by Jack Coyne. You're looking at Niall Devlin, one of Tyrone's nominees. And Tyrone were harder done by than Kerry were here. Tyrone only have two and he got to an All-Ireland semi-final. Like, look at Darragh Canavan, who kicked 7 points against Kerry in Croke Park, the All-Ireland champions, and 3 points against the Dubs, and he doesn't get nominated. I think there's a fair debate here in terms of certain players not being recognised, but sometimes it's the system. Sometimes those players are doing a job to get their team over the line to win an All-Ireland, and they're just not going to be recognised when it comes to the individual All-Stars. Mm. And that's okay. I don't think we're perfect. I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's, from what I can tell from being in the room for the last 2 years, it's fair. And anyone else who's in the room with me will know that I'm giving out a lot, or I'm arguing, or I'm maybe letting it go a little bit further. But, like, you know, I wouldn't be the most agreeable sort in these sort of situations. But it's a fair process.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about it. And, but it's not perfect. It's certainly fair. And to be honest, I enjoy being a part of it. I enjoy doing the work, trying to figure out who to go for. While I had a couple of outside shouts this year that missed out, I had a fair few of them as well.
Where do you meet?
The previous year was in the sponsors, PwC,
okay,
head office. This year it was in the Croke Park Hotel, and it was impossible to get parking.
How long would you go at it? Like, how long would it be going on for? What, is it one meeting?
It's one meeting, Arthur, but you're given a nod in kind of early September. You know, we need your nominations, your 45 nominations, your nominations for Young Footballer of the Year and Footballer of the Year. The Young Footballer of the Year debate was really big, really good this year. And I nearly said big. Like, what the hell am I? Who am I quoting there? But yeah, one meeting. Like, I would have a couple of propositions. I think it should be a little later at night. I think it should be
over a couple drinks.
It could be cameras.
Ambiance.
I think it would make for really good TV, and we'll put us all on the back foot a little bit. But it's an important process.
It'll be better TV than the Oireachtas committee for sure, and a bit of transparency too. I don't want to put you on the spot here by any means, but how often, let's say, does it happen that the losing finalists, Tommy, would get more nominations than the winners?
Very rarely, Cullum. You go back to 2016 and Dublin and Mayo were locked level after a replay with the same. And you think about this year's final and how much of a landslide Kerry won by. Like, they hammered Donegal. Now, that was, in one sense, I suppose, I would say a systems failure, but Kerry totally exploited the Donegal system and they made hay. I would also say it was maybe a little bit of a lack of a plan B, because plan A had worked so well for Donegal all year long. That's a fairly simplistic way of putting it. But like, Donegal did play 11 championship games. They played more championship games than anyone else. So they probably, their players on an individual level had more opportunities to show their hand, to show how good they were. Like, you can tell me the Kerry players you feel were hard done by. They're five starters that probably missed out. And these lads didn't play every championship game, but were involved throughout, were Dylan Gainey, who, of course, had a brilliant year, a super year. And perhaps when you look at some of the, maybe the lesser-known players that have gotten a shout from teams that didn't get as far as the All-Ireland final, I'm looking at maybe Loud or Meath, you might say, well, maybe Dylan Gainey had just as good a year as some of them. But I think you got to take context into it too. Dylan Gainey is often the fourth man marked in a Kerry attack. But his role as well, the amount of running that man did for Clifford, for Paddy, for Shawnee, opening space, opening channels, support runs. There was one game in particular where he got, I think, three from play, and two of them are David Clifford being surrounded by two or three players, and Dylan comes off the shoulder and gets the point. Dylan Gainey had a brilliant year. I think he was unlucky to not be in the conversation a little bit more. Graham O'Sullivan, again, the ultimate team player throughout the season, playing out of position. Then you look at the two midfielders who had phenomenal All-Ireland finals in Mark O'Shea and Sean O'Brien. And then in defence, their two cornerbacks, Dylan Casey and Paul Murphy. Murphy's feat, you know, All-Ireland final man of the match in 2014, is still delivering the goods in 2025. And Dylan Casey, who had a really good year but possibly went under the radar. And as I was trying to mention earlier with the man markers, and I didn't finish my point, you know, the likes of Jack Coyne, Niall Devlin, who else are the man markers back there? Brendan McColl, Jason Foley, and I suppose Finbar Rorty and Sean Rafferty were probably the ultimate defensive plays throughout the year. Like, a lot of the other backs lads are fellas who are making it happen going forward, fellas who are kicking two-pointers, fellas who are exploding up the field at pace. So I think defensively there's a fair bit of a split there as well.
When you're having these heated debates back and forth and all very enjoyable and all that, how much does the All-Ireland final itself dominate conversation?
I think it's different in football. And I think it has gotten different in hurling as well, but I certainly think it's different with the football season. You've got to take into account, lads, that the league now has an impact on the championship. Like, your league standing has an impact on where you end up in the championship. So, and I'm not saying that's a major factor. I really haven't. But there was probably some players who had extraordinary leagues, but maybe got injured in championship or didn't fully blossom in championship. I'm looking at Michael McKernan, who was absolutely phenomenal in the league and was a glaring kind of, was totally missing out for Tyrone when they missed him in big games. Like, you could see he was missing. And McKernan was in the conversation, but possibly missed out. John Bugler had a brilliant league, but the championship didn't light up for him the same way it did in the league. And you look at the split there, Cullum. So you've got Kerry with 9, the All-Ireland winners. Donegal with 10, the All-Ireland runners-up. Meath in an All-Ireland semi-final with 5 nominations, their most since 2007. Tyrone in an All-Ireland semi-final with just 2, which I think is incredibly harsh. Armagh, who got the All-Ireland quarter-final, the defending champions, got 5 nominations. You do well, though, to argue your way out of dropping one of them. So if one of you want to have a go, best of luck. Galway got 3 nominations. You look at where Galway got to. Monaghan got 3. Loud, the Leinster champions, got 3. The Dubs got 2. Their least, I think, since the last didn't win a Leinster title back in 2010. They might have even got more back in 2010. I'll have to double check that. Down got 1. Mayo got 1. And Derry got 1. So there's a bit of a split there from across the world. Like, Conor Glass was Derry's nominee. Phenomenal in midfield. He was a lock in midfield. Jack Coyne, as I mentioned, was Mayo's. I think he had a superb year, and he's going to have an even bigger year for Mayo next year. And then Down, I think Down were really unlucky to just get 1 nominee. Orra Murdoch, who was absolutely exceptional. But Down were the great entertainers, lads, this year. Ronan Burns was superb in goals, but the goalkeeper positions were incredibly competitive this season. Daniel Guinness was one of their leaders breaking out of defence. And one of my picks that actually missed out was one of their forwards, Danny McGill, who I thought was absolutely exceptional this year. Like, absolutely lit the place on fire whenever he got the ball. Kicked a number of two-pointers, points from play. And, you know, he would have been in the conversation. Pat Havren as well is in the top scorer list. So there's some teams that had players in the mix, in the conversation, but didn't get far enough or didn't maybe get as much of an opportunity to show their hand.
Speaking of the great entertainers, I can recall 2 separate times that you and I, Tommy, discussed on this show the Monday morning after the weekend the majesty of Matthew Thompson, right? So he's one of the 3 Young Footballer of the Year nominees. I was wondering, because of the way Galway were eliminated kind of so emphatically and disappointingly, does that immediately scupper the possibility of Thompson actually winning this award despite his skill up to that point?
Are you saying that there was a chance that he was going to miss out because of the way Galway bombed it?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I'm surprised to see him on the list, but I'm delighted that he's on it too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, sometimes with the Young Footballer of the Year debate, the most important person in the room is Kieran McSweeney of the GPA. And I don't say that lightly. He's got all the data births in front of him. And we don't have a huge amount of data on players these days. We barely know where they work. We don't know their ages. We don't really hear what their injuries are when they get injured. And this award is for 22 and under. So, Cullum, it was obvious that Matthew Thompson was under, I suppose, 22. It was obvious that Finbar Rorty was under 22 because Jim McGuinness nearly got a ban for playing him a day too early the year beforehand when he made his debut in a McKenna Cup game. And I suppose after that, there was a lot of nominees. And you're trying to figure out, are these fellas 21 or the 22 or the 23? Kieran Moore, who was nominated for an All-Star and was also nominated for Young Footballer of the Year last year, I don't think he won it. Oisin Connerty won it last year. So Moore just about missed out. And I think there was a danger that people missed out on Connerty for a while. But Oisin Connerty is of age in a serious conversation for an All-Star. Again, like Matthew Thompson, Cullum, he didn't probably get far enough in the championship. Mm. But was absolutely exceptional, was essential, was so good every game he played. He took the game to his opponents anytime he lined up for Armagh this year and was so hard to stop. And in the same vein, Matthew Thompson, he just knit it all together. And he was a joy to watch. He was a breath of fresh air. He was a different style of footballer. I think the new rules suited him immensely. I think they suited him immediately. And he slotted in straight away. He was probably Thompson... probably was going head to head with maybe a couple of others that were in the mix. I think there was eight nominees for Young Footballer of the Year this year, which is more than, you know, any year, I would imagine, in the last couple of seasons. There's been a while since we've had this amount of breakout stars of that age. Like Kieran Caulfield, for one, 21 years old. Captain his team to the Sigerson title this year, UCD to the Sigerson title earlier this year. I got that wrong, it was DCU he captained. And Caulfield was immense from wing back for Meath throughout the season. But I say immense. I also think you're looking at some of these lads and you're seeing the potential they could get to. Like when I see Kieran Caulfield now at 21, I sort of see Gavin White when he was captain in Kerry back in 2019. And I look at Gavin White now and I look at that Seamus Moynihan-esque performance in the All-Ireland final when he carried his team on the back and he just exploded from the throw-in every single time this year. Gavin White was immense for Kerry this season. And I would look at Kieran Caulfield and hope, even though he's nominated for Young Player of the Year, but hope that he can drive himself to that level in terms of Meath. And a lot of the nominees, when you look at, say, Meath this year, some of them deserve to be there. Mm. Some of them, when you compare them to maybe other players from other counties who are held to possibly higher standards, their own higher standards.
Yeah,
could say you could put them in an argument, but I think on an individual basis, a lot of those nominees have an opportunity to bring their game to another level. I think Caulfield is one of them, and I think Matthew Thompson is another.
When you have the meeting to get the nominees, is the meeting to pick the team the same meeting?
No, we'll meet Wednesday before the All-Star, so it'll be very, very tight. And this year, the football team is going to be revealed at second years. The football team is going to be revealed on the night itself. So, like any year, Ger, there'll be consensus on quite a few picks, and then you'll go to war over a couple of picks as well. I'd say there's three or four open slots there. You've got 10 locks, I'd say, nearly already.
And do you feel any guilt about giving Kerry the bulletin board material to win next year's All-Ireland? Like, it's only September and they're already... Oh, they've written us off there up above in Dublin.
Yeah, well, you can look at the breakdown of the selectors, and it's got nothing to do with Dublin. The meeting may take place in Dublin, but I think there's one selector from Dublin.
It doesn't matter, Tommy. That's the thing. The truth, Ger, is like, the first casualty of war, you know that.
Ger, it's Ireland. It's the GAA. You don't need All-Star nominations to develop a siege mentality or try and figure out a reason or somebody to blame.
Anything will do.
Kerry aren't going to need that at all. And I think when the All-Star team is named and they have double anyone else, they'll be happy enough.
All right. Tommy, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Nice one.
Thanks, lads. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Got a message in here from Roy Larmer, listening intently to this conversation that just ended there. All-Stars are recognition for the entire season. The RTE Team of the Year is focused on quarters, semis and the final.
It depends.
That's an opinion, not facts.
It's very nuanced.
I don't think that the league...
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting fact that you reminded us. So that's really, it does have implication, but you're never thinking of the league. You know, if you have an outstanding league performer, you're like, well, that's a shoo-in for an All-Star nomination.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know. Until it becomes a team that you select, it is just who is the best... Yeah. Six forwards who did the most flashy things.
Yeah,
who were the two best midfielders who did the flashy things, as opposed to...
That's what you think it should be.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's what it should be, isn't it?
No, because I think that there should be room for, like, we controlled possession for 42 minutes of the 60 minutes the ball was in play. Obviously, there's made up figures here, but just roll with me for a minute. We controlled possession because these two players actually just took the ball and there's none of that. Their passing accuracy was 100%. It's like, well, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Like, when the Pawdy possession stats came out after the All-Ireland final,
yeah,
it was too late because he wasn't man of the match, but he should have been man of the match.
Yeah, I mean, like, we shape it into a team just because it's a nice package, yeah. Because it's not the top 15 players in the year, because that could be like 14 players in the same position if it was an incredible year for forwards.
It's essentially what it is, though.
But they have to manufacture it that way.
Oh, right.
But it should be like you can play individually greater,
and
your team could lose. That might not be your fault.
Yeah, but it's very difficult for us to find that.
Well, you'd be hard pushed to argue that way, though. That it's almost like you're looking for more variety in it, when in all reality it's like Clifford's a bad example, but like you don't really need to know what anyone's doing in any other county
to know he's footballer of the year.
That's the guy in that position.
How do the Louth and Meath and Monaghan and Derry footballers who are like the best in their position in the country ever get recognition?
Prove themselves against those.
And they can do that.
Consequence, but the same way, like the same way, they'll never win the All Ireland.
Well, so just tease that one out, because you can prove yourself against somebody, right?
Yeah,
your team gets hammered 10-20. You are astonishingly good by any metrics except the one that everybody sees and goes, "Ah, sure." Well, it didn't show up.
Well, Craig Lennon last year.
Yeah,
it's not like Louth had a vintage year.
It's like, it's a bit of a unicorn, though, isn't it?
Kinda, yeah. Like Sligo has 4 All Stars. That's in about 50 odd years that they've been going.
Maybe there have been years where they could have had some.
Yeah, but
would you ever know?
Yeah, but I suppose that's the nature of it, isn't it? You can't really, you're not going to, I don't think it's fair to say.
Maybe a better way of doing it, I don't know. I'm just.
There's no definition of it, though, of what it is like. It's this massively subjective thing that's a round table debate that we just discovered. That's what this is.
Off the Ball Breakfast is with the UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.